Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Workforce and Business Development Finance and Policy Committee. I call this meeting to order, and I just wanted to notify everyone, please mute your mics and members and testifiers and guests as we start the meeting. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This meeting can be viewed on the House webcast for the television that we have. With that, I just wanted to call the legislative committee legislative assistant to now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Hamilton present.
Hamilton present. Baker. Baker. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Thank you, President. Greenman?
Present.
Greenman present. Haley?
Haley present.
Haley present. Juergens?
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle?
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun?
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson?
Present.
Olson present. Zhang?
Present.
Zhang present. Baker? Baker? Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. With that, Lead Hamilton, did you want to move the minutes for March 7th?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So moved.
Lead Hamilton moves the approval of minutes for March 7th. Any discussion? Hear none. Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none. The minutes for March 7th are now approved. With that, members, we have a few bills today, and I just wanted to make sure that we give everyone an opportunity to discuss the bills before us. We start with Representative Olson's bill, House File 3783. Representative Olson, welcome to your committee, and please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I move that House File 3783 be referred to the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. And Mr. Chair, I do have an A1 amendment as well.
Yes, please. Do you want to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, I'd like to do that. It'll get the bill in the shape I'd like to describe it. So I would move the A1 amendment.
Great. So we have A1 amendment. Any discussion, members? No discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none. The A1 amendment is now adopted. To your bill, Representative Olson, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I know this committee has already had lots of discussion around childcare and how it ties to workforce. And so, and we know that there's nearly 95,000 childcare slots that we're lacking throughout our state. And that 80, and then the 7-county metro area accounts for 55% of the shortage, and the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota account for 45% of the shortage. So the DEED Childcare Economic Development Grant Program has been very successful in helping communities across the state to add new childcare slots by providing funding for childcare business startups or expansions, training, facility modifications, direct subsidies or incentives to retain employees, and assistance with licensing and other regulatory requirements. In 2021, the DEED Childcare Economic Grant Development Program received $5 million in appropriation, thanks to the work of this committee. And in December of 2021, DEED awarded $2.5 million in grants, half of its biennial appropriation. In that time, DEED received over $9 million in grant requests for these dollars in just the first year. Several high-quality projects did not receive funding, not because they lacked merit, but because we lacked the funding in the program to do so. So this bill does two things. It provides an additional $5 million in the second year of the current biennium for the DEED Childcare Economic Development Grant Program. And in addition, it allows the six initiative foundations to provide sub-grants to partner organizations for their childcare grant program that was funded last year. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers to speak to the bill as amended.
Please invite the testifiers to testify on the bill.
Great. So first testifier is Scott McMahon, the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership.
Mr. McMahon, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Noor, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Executive Director for the Greater Minnesota Partnership. We are a collection of businesses, local governments, chambers of commerce, foundations, higher education institutions throughout Greater Minnesota focused on economic development in our communities. All too often, economic development in our communities is hindered by the lack of child care available. Our businesses have a hard time recruiting new employees that move into community if there isn't child care. And our existing employees have a hard time maintaining their work opportunities when their families can't find child care. Throughout Greater Minnesota, our child care crisis, frankly, is defined by an overall lack of child care. Throughout the metro area, it's both affordability and lack, but far too often in Greater Minnesota, we don't have any providers providing child care at any price. So it truly is a lack within our communities. The D Child Care Economic Development Grant Program has been extremely impactful in our communities that have been able to take advantage of it. From a historical standpoint, this program is about 4 years old. In the first biennium, it received about $500,000 in funding. In the second biennium, it received about $750,000 in funding. And last year, this body increased that funding up to $5 million. What's happened over that time is the first two bienniums as the grant program was established, communities were reacting to the funds being available. The $500,000 came on board and communities said, wow, there's money available for us to do some stuff. Let's figure out what we can do. Now we're at the point where communities are planning. They're being strategic. They're being innovative. They're trying to find exciting ways, new ways to address their childcare problems by using these resources as well as local resources that are available. I just want to hit on a couple of examples of what these dollars do. They create new childcare capacity in our communities. We have two communities that received $50,000 grants in the first round of the program 4 years ago. They were able to leverage close to $800,000 in local money to build new childcare centers. In one community, it was the first dollars in that then brought the business community to the table. In the other community, it was the last dollars in to help close the deal to make the childcare centers a possibility. These dollars have profound impacts on the communities that are able to take advantage of the dollars. Other communities are able to take advantage of them to provide training for their childcare providers. If you think about Greater Minnesota with 80 counties and a significant geographic portion of the state, it is extremely difficult for childcare providers to access the training that they need on an annual basis to maintain their licensure. Far too often, those opportunities are provided during the week and based in the metro. Well, when you're a childcare provider, it's extremely difficult to take a weekday off and to travel to the metro to take the training you get. So these dollars have provided that training opportunity. They've also allowed communities to access funds to plan for how do they address their childcare crisis, how do they bring the different resources to the table, and how do they close that gap. It was unfortunate. Well, we were excited to see the significant increase in funding for this program last session. So thank you all for that commitment. But it was disheartening to see how many good projects were left on the cutting room floor in December, not because of the lack of quality of the program, but simply because DEED did not have enough funding to fund the grants. These are all programs and projects and opportunities that will address the childcare crisis in specific communities that their employers need in order to build a workforce they need to either grow or maintain their businesses in our communities. Now, I talk a lot about Greater Minnesota, and this is a statewide program. The first round, it was focused solely on Greater Minnesota. It's been expanded. Now the metro is available. And we've seen great projects coming out of the Twin Cities that use these dollars, and some great projects are funded in December. But again, there are more projects and more programs that need funding, and the additional $5 million that's being proposed in this bill, while probably won't fill the full need, it will at least get more money out there for the grant application to coming forward. And again, it's spurring more creativity from communities to figure out how do we address this problem. So we appreciate the opportunity to support this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions as the committee hearing goes on.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I see we have Mr. Marquardt for the testimony to testify on this bill. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Scott Marquardt of Southwest Initiative Foundation. I manage our economic development programs. We serve the 18 counties and two Native Nations of rural Southwest Minnesota, with our regional centers being Wilmer, Worthington, Marshall, and Hutchinson. We border South Dakota and Iowa, competing for workforce and for private investment. And my lens includes many communities that have three-digit populations. I am here today in support of this bill, which will provide critically needed resources to help address the child care crisis in communities throughout Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Olson, for your leadership and for your sponsorship of this bill. As we all know, the severe shortage of child care capacity continues to have significant impact on communities and families throughout Minnesota. Even though my lens is rural, I know that the metropolitan communities and businesses are also facing this severe issue. You've already heard that there was $9.5 million in requests for the funding available in the most recent grant round. As Scott McMahon said, we had to turn down a lot of wonderful projects that could help alleviate this crisis. Many of these great projects were developed through or grounded in robust community engagement, collaboration amongst public, private, and nonprofit sectors, grounded in solid data and analytics, and in prudent business planning and sustainability. In addition to the impact that this bill will have on workforce recruitment and retention, this bill will also help foster potential repurposing, reinvestment, and redevelopment of underutilized commercial real estate in our downtowns, in the former school buildings, and in other properties. These projects foster and catalyze the innovative models that are proving to be transformational in our rural communities and throughout Minnesota. Collaborations between schools and hospitals, employer-driven models, engagement of our faith community, new opportunities for family license providers, and collaborations that we have not yet dreamed of. Minnesota needs to increase and retain capacity in both family license and center-based programs, and these public investments have done that, and they'll continue to do that. In my day job, we see a number of business plans and pro formas regarding startups or expansions of childcare enterprises, both family and center-based. These are visionary entrepreneurs, leaders and collaborators, but they face financial challenges and budget constraints. Public sector investment from the state of Minnesota is essential so that childcare enterprises continue to be developed and grounded in sound planning, sound processes, that it's sustainable, that quality is not compromised, and that it's affordable for all families. Since the last legislative session, I'm sure you've all seen numerous articles, TV news reports, and everything from academics and economists regarding affordability and availability of childcare. It's having a severe impact on our workforce, but it's especially impacting BIPOC families, women, and low-income families. Many of the experts talk passionately about how childcare is one of the top issues impacting how women will engage in the workforce during the recovery and beyond. This is critical so that all Minnesota kids can thrive and that businesses can recruit and retain the talent they need to compete globally. This is an equity issue. This is an economic competitiveness issue. In the interest of time, there's a lot of stats that are in the document that you're handed out. Again, lifting it up statewide, First Children's Finance data said the shortage has worsened statewide to 95,000 slots, over 95,000. In our region, it's 3,900 alone, and that number has increased since June of 2020. I can't imagine how big that deficit would be without the DEED Child Care Grant Program and the other investments that you've authorized and done. So we are so grateful for the capital that's been put to work now, but more needs to be done because there's a lot of lifting ahead. So thank you for that. And again, in closing, Mr. Chair and committee members, we do ask for the subgrant authority for the funds specifically awarded to the initiative foundations. That was outside of the scope of the competitive grant. It was directly to us, but we believe that will allow for more efficient and effective deployment of that capital to work with our partners in better ways. So again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time. Thank you for allowing us to share that this crisis is still happening in our regions, but we're hopeful with these investments that we'll continue to tackle it in a way that promotes equity, sustainability, collaboration, and innovation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Members, any discussions? This is an important issue. If there are no any questions from members, I just wanted to ask a quick question. Mr. Marquardt or McMahon can respond to that. I wanted to know the base grant program that was done through the Department of Human Services. How well does that program interact with the work that you're doing on the ground with the DEED funding?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer that question, but I'm not recognizing which program at Human Services you're referencing, unfortunately.
We had the Child Care Stabilization Base Grant, which allowed for facilities to be used for facilities in terms of equipments and some of the base need to change the carpets and so many other things. As we are creating and developing opportunities to build new child care centers, how does this program really interact with the DHS?
Sure, Mr. Chair, thank you for that clarification. So that program, if I am recalling it correctly, was created last year using the federal child care money that came through. One of the challenges we have with those funds is that they aren't allowed to be used to build new child care centers or child care facilities. So it really is limiting. It does allow for the rehabilitation of existing facilities, which is great, and at times places need it for ADA compliance, to update water and lighting and whatnot. But it doesn't address the 40,000 child care slot deficit we have in greater Minnesota or the 95,000 child care deficit that we have throughout the state. I'm also, the last time I checked in with Department of Human Services, that program hadn't been launched yet. So those grants haven't even been sent out to any communities. That the last time I had checked with them, that may have changed by now, but that was late 2021, I believe, when I checked with them last on that.
Thank you so much, Mr. McMahon, for the response. We'll follow up with the department because there's a need for collaboration to make sure that whatever investment we're making here can be sustained, and we can take a good look at how the two programs are really intertwined, and we can help more people at the same time, because we know the need is real. We know that the gap we see right now with workforce participation, especially for women who have left the workforce completely, in order for us to succeed, I think this is a critical investment to provide childcare needs across the state, and it's something that I'm willing to put forward more, resources as individual, as a member, and I'm hoping that this committee will support that. I see Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Rep. Olson, for this bill. Again, I think that I know a lot of firsthand knowledge about this type of funding. One of those communities that Scott had mentioned earlier, Spicer, was one of those recipients of the $50,000. And I will tell you, I've shared this story, and members that want to know more about this, I'm happy to talk to you about this online, but we literally helped the YMCA in our area open up a daycare center. We raised $800,000 locally. We took some empty mall space in an older mall in a small town, got a great deal going, but the community really rallied behind it. And the $50,000 in our case was sort of the gap to finish off that project. We had a lot of it coming, but when we kind of got that final $50,000, that was our final thing that we could move forward. So one of the things I want to bring up to Representative Olson, though, and I want to tell you that the local initiative foundations really do know best where the needs are. And I hope that your pockets and buckets of money here, where are they going to go to this area? Try to push as much as you can into the initiative foundations. I think Mr. Marcourt did a nice job. They were very active also in our Spicer project as well. They know where the most urgent area is. So I'm fully behind this bill. I want to make sure that my comments were shared, because I was a very in-depth of this process in Spicer. Again, we were able to turn over this beautiful brand new facility to the YMCA with no debt, really. And they were able to just take on the lease, take on the operations, and it really was something that should be modeled by many many communities. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, but I just want to really put a plug for the initiative foundations. Thank you.
Indeed. I think we did that in our previous session last year when we put more funding into the initiative directly. And this is why we want to give them that opportunity to do re-granting. So a great way of investing in our communities. Representative Cortizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Olson, for bringing this bill forward. I'm excited to have the opportunity to talk more about it in the Early Childhood Committee. But I did something that I'm remembering from our hybrid joint session that we did toward the start of this legislative session with the Early Childhood Committee, was one of the comments, I think, from a testifier from First Children's Finance, was that the childcare workforce is the backbone of everyone else's workforce. And so kind of looking at it from the workforce side of things, we know how many parents, particularly mothers, have had to leave their jobs to stay home and help their kids work through distance learning, or if it was a childcare issue that they're dealing with, but they're not able to be doing the job that they once were doing. And I think that when we look at what some of the things that were shared today and how creative local communities have been, and that they're able to come to us and tell us this is what our community needs, it's so important that we're able to support them in that, because childcare is not a one size fits all model. And so I think this is just really, really beneficial, and I appreciate it.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I just wanted to reflect a little bit on Representative Baker's comments. We're extremely fortunate in Greater Minnesota that we have the six initiative foundations representing the six and servicing the six deed areas throughout Greater Minnesota. And Chair Noor, to your comment about the work between deed and DHS on this, I do want to highlight the tremendous work that happens between this deed grant program and our six initiative foundations. A significant number of the grant requests coming in from Greater Minnesota for the deed child care grant program either have the support of their local initiative foundation or are working in collaboration with them, or the project has come that they're applying for the deed grant has come out of the work of the initiative foundation doing the on the ground community work. And so there is a significant amount of collaboration and shared resources that happen between these deed grants when they go out in Greater Minnesota and the work of the initiative foundations throughout our communities.
Thank you so much for that update. And don't see anyone else. Representative Olson, did you have any closing remarks and renewing your motion as we proceed?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for prioritizing this issue in the Workforce Committee, you know, through this hearing and the work you did last year in Conference Committee and whatnot. That doesn't go unnoticed, and we're here because we want to build off what's successful, and I think we've heard very clearly from the testifiers that there's real opportunity to do have a huge impact. Things are ready to go and they need the funding and to be working with the partners on the ground, the initiative foundations and DHS and everybody else, is because it's an all hands on deck moment. And this is a great resource to get money where it needs to go. So with that, I just ask for your support and renew my motion that House File 3783 as amended be referred to the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee.
That's the motion. The committee legislative assistant, Mr. Bedu, will now take the role.
Chair Noor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Aye.
Lead Hamilton?
Aye.
Baker?
Aye.
Frankie?
Frankie, aye.
I'm sorry, Frankie? No.
Aye.
Greenman?
Aye.
Haley?
Aye.
Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Cagle?
Aye.
Cortizo Atun?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
And Zhang?
Aye.
Chair Noor, we have 12 ayes and 0 nays.
With 12 ayes and 0 nays, Representative Olson, you're on your way to Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you so much, members. The next bill we have is House File 2082. Representative Davis, welcome to the committee. And please, I will move to lay House File 2082 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill to us.
Well, thank you, Chair Noor. If we could possibly first take the A1 amendment, what it does is it has to do with putting the time out a little further. The way I originally wrote the bill, it didn't quite work, so we need to change the dates a little bit here.
Members, there's an A1 amendment. I will move the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, A1 amendment is now adopted. With that, Representative Davis, with the bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Chair Knorr. And I'd like to, I have one testifier, and I believe he has some of his board members with him. If I could introduce Dan Hollerman, he's the treasurer on the board of the Chosen Valley Care Center Incorporated. And I'd like to make sure he gets the bulk of the time here. So I'd like to turn it over to him, Mr. Chair.
Very well, Mr. Dan Hollerman. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Representative Davis, and thank you, Chairman Knorr, for your support on this bill. I am Dan Hollerman. I am the treasurer on the board of directors for the Chosen Valley Care Center Incorporated in Chatfield, Minnesota. Several board members are with us, along with our administrator. We have John Kelly, our administrator, Gary Brand, our board president, and board member Cheryl Bennett and Mary Allen. You've previously received our prepared comments regarding this matter, and it's a rather lengthy document, and I'm not going to cover all of that in this conversation. The document provides a lot of background and describes what led up to us asking for this support. I would direct your attention to lines 35 and 36 of our prepared documents because it is an expansion and renovation plan that began and carried on through extraordinary times in 2019 through 2021 that this bill is in support of. The bulk of the document, lines 38 through 141, share the goals and the details of the expansion and the renovation project. Of note, though, I would direct your attention to lines 142 through 151 of this document, because a major goal of our expansion and renovation was to eliminate the amount, and greatly reduce the amount of double occupancy rooms that we had in our facility. And we are pleased to report that we've achieved that. And 80% of our residents now live in full private rooms or single rooms, and we have a bare minimum of double occupancy rooms remaining. And that was a great goal for us to achieve. Line 152 is where I'd really like to jump into this conversation in greater detail. When we broke ground in October 3rd of 2019, and within days of that, we encountered a buried debris field that had its origins in the mid-1970s prior to the corporation acquiring the site. There were trace smells of accelerants that were detected among the debris. The MPCA was contacted, testing was conducted, and the area, along with a sizable margin, was classified as a hazardous waste site. Remediation required removing more than 9,350 cubic yards of material, approximately 550 dump truck loads, to put that into perspective, hauling it to a designated hazardous waste site 60 miles away, then replacing that same amount of material with engineered and compacted fill so our construction could continue. Resolving this issue disrupted our planned construction timelines, putting us into unexpected winter building conditions. Our geotechnical borings did not discover this site because the debris field had a very small footprint but was very deep. The cost impact of remediating this problem was $423,000 and was unexpected. By the time the U.S.-China trade war hit its peak, our project contracts had been awarded, bonding was in place, and we were already underway with construction and renovations. The effect of the tariff war, however, impacted us locally, raising our material costs by $480,000 through the course of this project. COVID-19 began to impact our project nearly immediately also. We received several grants that benefited the daily operations of the Chosen Valley Care Center. Yet the vast majority of the changes that were required to construction methods were passed on to us as cost increases to the project. The total cost of the COVID-19 issues on the construction budget was $234,000. If you direct your attention to line item 207 through 215, this area identifies the total impact on our construction project from these four issues, which is slightly over $1.1 million. And that is what HF 2082 is asked to address. Our organization has been operating successfully within its means as we have grown and expanded over the last 46 years. Expansions and renovations have been carefully planned and executed to assure that we remain a viable organization servicing our community and our surrounding areas well. These unexpected costs of the items identified here included in this funding request will have an impact on our future. Our post-construction financial position is not where we projected it to be, and that is due to depleting our cash reserves by $1.1 million. We are seeking assistance to mitigate the impact of these cost increases, which were beyond our control, unforeseen, unbudgeted, and out of our contingency scope. We are requesting help to restore the total health of our financial future and put us back on the track planned for operations post-construction. Without this aid, we will be forced to implement cost-saving measures that will impact our organization severely, and that ultimately affects our residents, our quality of care, our employees, our benefits, and our ability to remain competitive in the marketplace. We ask your help to restore our financial position, allowing us to continue to be the organization that we need to be, maintain the level of care that we've been proud of providing, and ultimately put us back on track to being the successful long-term community center that we are. We are deeply grateful that this committee has taken this matter under consideration. Thank you, Chairman Noor, and thank you, Representative Davids, for your support on this matter.
Thank you so much, Mr. Holman, and for your testimony. Members, any discussion?
Yes, Mr.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Davids, I see a couple benefits to funding this project. One, you're providing great quality service to people in need. The second is, they did find a site that had contaminated soils, which subsequently was cleaned up in a karst region. So it's very important that we get sites like that cleaned up as well. So I see a couple very positives to funding this, and I thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. I also wanted to check in if Representative Davids had reached out to DEED and figured out if there are other options that could have mitigated this issue. You know, we do have some funding that was allocated for this purpose.
Well, thank you, Chair Noor, and we have looked at other funding. At this point, we have not received anything, and so we've felt this was one of the options. This is a very, very well-run institution. They ran into something that was certainly unexpected, and I'm hoping that we can help them out here. It's quite a facility. I've toured it several times, and they do a great job for the community. And if there's any other ideas, we're certainly open to any ideas.
Well, thank you so much. We'll be looking into other options as we go through this process, because every option needs to be at the table as we have conversation on legislative deliberation. So, Lead Hamilton, did you have any follow-up?
No, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I'll lower my hand there.
Any other discussion, members? With that, any closing remarks, Representative David?
Yes, thank you, Chair Noor, and I'd like to thank Mr. Hollerman, who this board of directors is amazing. They're watching where every dollar goes, and they run into a situation that was unexpected, and I'm hoping that we can help them out. And Chair Noor, I thank you for the hearing, and look forward to working with you down the road on this.
With that, members, I renew my motion. House File 2082, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so much, Representative Davids, for presenting this bill, and to the testifiers. The next bill we have is House File 3536. Representative Greenman, welcome to your committee. Please introduce the bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I'm moving House File 3536 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. I appreciate members the opportunity to introduce this bill and to present it about the Neighborhood Development Center. The bill is an appropriation of $9.5 million in fiscal year 23 to fund their work in assisting and supporting low-income and BIPOC entrepreneurs and their small businesses. NDC has a 29-year track record of training, assisting, and lending to community entrepreneurs, and this grant will support their work, and I'll just outline a little bit how it will do that. $2 million will go to micro businesses and small business capital for loans to businesses that would be denied by banks with terms customized to the needs of the entrepreneurs. $3.5 million will go for real estate lending capital for established small and micro businesses seeking to build wealth by purchasing commercial property. These requests are non-recourse loans that can be recycled as new loans as they're paid, as the older loans are paid off. $2 million would go for NDC's current and small business incubators, and $1 million would go to supporting the development of business incubators outside the metro area, and then $1 million for loan loss reserves. We do have the founder and CEO of NDC, as well as their community engagement director, to go a little bit more in depth about, and then one of the entrepreneurs to go a little bit more in depth about the funding requests and how it will support the work. But I just want to highlight a few things as we think about this as policymakers. NDC does critical work to empower low-income and BIPOC entrepreneurs to transform their neighborhood economies. They incubate and support small businesses through their comprehensive model of training and of high-risk, high-touch lending and ongoing technical assistance. It's the work, the businesses they support are averaging 10 years in existence, and that's twice the average of businesses in Minnesota. They are small businesses that are strengthening their community and our state. Because of NDC's work, there are now 437 businesses operating in the metro area, including 3,250 people. NDC has a statewide impact, providing capacity building and support for four communities in greater Minnesota. They manage five small business incubators in Minneapolis and St. Paul, which are home to 129 businesses. These incubators provide entrepreneurs with permanently affordable commercial space, access to business services along key commercial corridors. Collectively, each year, these businesses return $10.6 million to the state coffers in income and sales taxes. It's a great return on investment. And a Wilder study estimated that the total economic return to neighborhoods is estimated at about $93 million. The micro and small businesses that NDC incubates support, that NDC incubates and supports are the main street and small businesses that need our investment the most. With it, that chair, I think we have a few testifiers and I will turn it over back to you to comment.
Thank you so much, Representative Greenman. And the first testifier on this bill, I see Mr. Tamal. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Nora. My name is Mike Tamale, and I'm the founder and CEO of NDC. And actually, I'd like to turn the beginning of this over to my partner, Earlsworth Baba Latang, who's the Director of Community Engagement for NDC. Baba.
Mr. Baba Latang, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Earlsworth Baba Latang, B-A-B-A Baba L-E-T-A-N-G Latang. And I'm the Director of Community Engagement for NDC. I worked at the Midterm Global Market for 16 years with NDC, and originally from an island in the Caribbean, came to Minnesota. I used to ride on Lake Street, and I remember seeing a big CS building. It was vacant. Always wondered what was going on in this empty building. So happened 10 years after I finished college, I went to work with Neighborhood Development Center at the Midterm Global Market. And from an empty building, because of the work that NDC had been doing and some of our community partners, we had like 1.5 million people coming to the Midtown Global Market, creating a lot of energy in this area. We jobs, 200 jobs created in a building that was empty. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that this thing is working. This strategy is working. The goal, our goal is to empower entrepreneurs with business knowledge and access to opportunities to develop successful business that bring them into the mainstream economy. It adds jobs and revitalize the community. There's an important word I want to emphasize, and that is empower. Because we don't want to just hand them things. We want to give them the opportunity to create. These are people with skills. These are people with passion. These are people that want to make a better Minnesota. And what organizations like NDC is doing is just giving them the equipment, equipping them with the technical assistance that they need, the resources that will help them to transfer that passion into making Minnesota a better state. That's what we are there for. We focus on low-income neighborhoods, especially commercial corridors, including Lake Street and University. And all of us know what happened, especially in those corridors. And I will say, and I am very confident that there are so many opportunities. And the work that we do today, the support that we do, and that's why we are testifying in support of this bill, because we believe as we continue to support these businesses, this is how we're going to really continue to create the goal and the vision that we want. NDC is not only, as you heard, is not only working in the state. We are also expanding into greater Minnesota, and Mihailo Tamale will talk a little bit about that. This year, 12% of NDC general operating budget comes from the state. And even before I go further, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for the support that you have given to NDC in the past. And thank you for the support that we'll continue to receive as we continue to do the work to drive our state forward. We heard about the return, $11 million back to the state. So this is not just a handout. This is something that's working. We are generating income back into the state. So as we get that help, we give back to the state. And we saw that for every dollar raised, we create $40 of community economic impact in terms of taxes, wages, and spending. This is one I really like. The average entrepreneur increases their annual household by $25,000 after working with NDC. I want us to really hear that. They increase their income, their revenue, their annual household income by $25,000. And that's why we're here in support of this bill. I'm asking you to continue to support that. And with this, Mr. Chairman, I will hand back to the CEO, Mike Tamale.
Thank you so much, Mr. Babalatang. I still remember that empty building of CS Tower that used to be nothing and got transformed to be a major economic hub in South Minneapolis and residents, and also connecting to the hospital. Great asset in our city and also for our state. And I clearly value the additions that you're making in terms of that economic impact. Mr. Tamale.
Thank you again. My name is Mike Tamale, founder and CEO of NDC. So we've worked for 29 years here in the Twin Cities doing the things that you've been hearing about, training folks, financing those same folks, and then supporting them with technical assistance in their businesses, and occasionally building out some business incubators. But we've also been committed to building capacity in other communities around community economic development. And that has included working in greater Minnesota. We don't do lending out there. We don't do training of entrepreneurs out there or anything like that. What we do is work with just a small handful of communities that have expressed interest in hearing a little bit about our model, seeing if there's some additional things that could be of interest to be adapted and adopted in their area. And a year ago, Representative Rod Hamilton, you oriented us towards Worthington, if you recall, and connected us with the city manager. And so I drove out there in July, and we had a good meeting, and we're having actually a meeting next week with some community leaders, and including with Scott Marquardt, who you heard earlier today from Southwest Initiative Foundation, who's a big asset and part of that discussion. So we'll see where that goes. We're currently helping groups in greater Minnesota take up this model, including the Lower Sioux Indian community in that same area. The Initiative Foundation out of Little Falls in St. Cloud, who's been doing the model up in St. Cloud and in Brainerd, and then the Family Freedom Center up in Duluth. And we've been working with the Mille Lacs Band on their business incubator strategy. And in all cases, again, we're just sort of learning from them, number one, and number two, sharing what we know and what's worked for us, and then helping them sort of adapt it to their setting. But we've also shared funding that we've received from you, from the legislature, with all of those communities. And that's part of what we want to do if we can get this bill passed, specifically this time for any incubator projects they might have out there. Because as you heard, we have five incubators that we operate with over 100 small businesses. And for us, a business incubator is a place where there's long-term affordable space for these small businesses, where they're supported by our training and our technical assistance and our financing. That's what an incubator means to us. And we build them always right in a very visible location so that they're inspiring their kids, their neighbors, the people driving by to also take a hard look at the entrepreneur path. So that's a big part of what we're asking for is building out, sort of updating and upgrading some of our own incubators with energy efficiencies, technology, and so on, but also be able to support a couple projects in Greater Minnesota that may come up through our connections out there. And then the other part of what we're asking for is more loan capital, both for small business financing and for real estate financing. The small business financing is more for the startups and the, you know, the real small mom and pop businesses that can't get a bank loan. Mostly they do not have the C's of lending real strong, good credit maybe, or the collateral, proven capacity to pay, et cetera, but they have character and we know their character from all the training that we've done with them previously and all the one-on-one technical assistance we do with them. So we base our lending decisions heavily on that. Historically, we've had about a 98% repayment rate. In 2020, it was a little worse, about 4.7% write-off rate, but that was when COVID hit so bad. We've been able to help hundreds and hundreds of them with many millions of dollars that you appropriated that came through deed that kept the bulk of them alive. And so they'll come out of the pandemic and pivot their business, learn a lot of things with our technical assistance help and with their own brains and energy. But this kind of lending we do is really reliant on being able to know their character, have the connections with them, with training and technical assistance, with community connections, and get them on the ladder, because a couple of years down the road, they'll be bankable. And that's where they go then, is into a bank, and they'll have a financial they can show, they'll have a business projection and a business plan they can show, and they'll have us at their side if that's useful. So with that, what I'd like to do is introduce our third testifier today, an entrepreneur named Sean Hopman from Brainerd, Minnesota, who took the Initiative Foundation NDC training class and launched Yashir Kombucha in Brainerd, Minnesota, and apparently is introducing kombucha to that area of our great state. Sean?
Mr. Hopman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Well, hello. Excuse me. Hello, and thanks for having me. I'm Sean Hopman. I'm the founder and owner and everything else of Yashir Kombucha up in Brainerd, Minnesota. I'll really quick share a little bit about my business and move into how this program had helped me through that process. We formed the business back in 2019, late 2019. I rented some space from a fellow brewery in town so that we could do kind of a build up a wholesale business. So through 2020 and the pandemic and everything, we did mostly just wholesale to restaurants and bars when they were open as non-alcoholic options. We found bottling our kombucha and selling it at different places around was basically what we were doing for that part. As we began to outgrow that part of what we were doing, we were taking up too much space at the brewery and needed to expand. So in the process of 2020, the Initiative Foundation in Brainerd had a 12-week business course called the Enterprise Academy. And I was able to jump into that. And being a guy that doesn't do or hasn't had a lot of experience in business, it was awesome for me because it took us from idea to brick and mortar, and through the entire process, gave us all the tools, all of the we got this big, huge binder with all the resources that we needed to find the information that we were looking for. So in the process of that 12 weeks of taking that class, I actually found a building that we could move our business into and have a full brewery and tap room. So we worked with, I worked with some of the people teaching my course, and through that we were able to secure a loan to purchase the building. We opened our tap room, moved our brewery in, and we have one of only two or three non-alcoholic tap rooms in the entire state. And there's less than a handful of kombucha tap rooms in the entire state. So we're kind of rare, and a little bit of a risk taking, you know, heading into that, but has been completely worth it. After graduating from that course, I was also able to take a small loan through the Initiative Foundation to purchase more equipment so that I could up my production and be able to move into more areas. Obviously, we had to, now we have a tap room, so now we have to supply that as well as all of our wholesale customers that we take care of. So we were able to utilize that. The other great thing about the whole program and being a part of all this is that it doesn't just stop once we graduated from the class. I am still in very much in contact with the people who headed that up. And anytime I have a question, I just call one of them, and if they don't have the answers, they can point me in the right direction. And they've also done some really cool alumni things where, you know, we can even learn. We had a class just to learn how to do QuickBooks, you know, specifically for QuickBooks, so we can work our way through it. And that's been a great, great resource for us. So this everything that's been talked about is working and very needed. I would be very excited about an incubator spot in the Brainerd area, wink, wink. Because I can think of probably a handful of my small business friends right now that could really benefit from that sort of a opportunity. So
thank you so much, Mr. Hoffman. So the name is Yashua Kombucha?
Yes. A play on Yashua, you betcha.
Yeah, I was trying to tease you on that. We need to. Anyway, you got it right before I said it. Next time that you are in Brainerd, make sure that you visit the tap room and enjoy the non-alcoholic brewery there. So, Lid Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hoffman, thank you for your testimony. I always appreciate hearing from these success stories. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And also, I'd just like to send out a sincere thank you to Mr. Latang and Mr. Tamale for reaching out to my community as well. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. Representative Joggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, prior to being elected to the House of Representatives, I was on the Economic Development Authority in Cottage Grove. And at one time, we had a building that was available to us, and so we attempted to set up an incubator, business incubator. So I have a little bit of experience with this. And my question, I'm not sure if it's to the bill author or one of the testifiers, but it sounds like a loaded question. It really isn't. But what is the goal of the incubators? I know we heard the testimony, but when it all boils down to it, what is the actual goal of the incubator?
I see Mr. Tamale is ready to go.
What? That's a good question, Representative Juergens. And not all incubators have the same goals. And so it's one of these semi-generic words or terms. And a lot of them, you know, will be set up by a university or by even a venture capitalist and give you a three-year tenancy, and maybe with a board, an advisory board, maybe some investment and so on, and then they'll take a portion of the ownership and so on, you know, for faster growth businesses. In our case, our goal is to, number one, create long-term affordable space for some of these neighborhood entrepreneurs that we work with, because there's plenty of them. Most of them actually get leases elsewhere and occasionally move on to buy their own building, and we help them with all of that as well. But in our incubators, we can kind of concentrate, you know, 30, 40, 50 of them in one building. We can own it long-term and keep the rents very affordable. And we can provide technical assistance and training and lending to them in a real efficient manner. And so we don't throw them out after 3 years typically. Our goal is to have them grow, and not just within that building, but at a second or third location. Often, like this past 2 years, we've gone in with every one of our entrepreneurs in the global market and a few of our other buildings and built out their ability to do online sales for takeout and delivery, because most of them didn't have a POS system, social media, or a website. So we built that out in that case very efficiently at no cost to them, so that they could, you know, survive the dramatic change in how the economy works. So our goal is to really hold some key corners of our of these communities long-term for that purpose, and also to just, you know, shine a light on entrepreneurship in these communities that very often haven't had a lot of role models in that regard, right? Because we're all kind of a drop in the bucket, whether you're talking, you know, $1 million or $100, all of the money we have to work with is a drop in the bucket relative to the whole economy. So our long-term goal with the incubators, as well as with all of our other programs, is to really lift up this idea of entrepreneurship and what is the path the next generation, newcomers, old timers, anybody that's got an idea, a skill, how do you turn that into a business that can sustain your family? And they're going to learn from each other way more than from anybody else. And so the more visible they can be, and the more successful they can be, the more people they will touch in that regard.
Representative.
And when we had the incubator in Cottage Grove, one thing that I learned from it is that in a metro area or a suburban area, it might not be as good of a situation as it is in greater Minnesota. For example, early on with our incubator, we judged it by how many people did we have, how many businesses did we have in our business incubator. When really what we needed to be focusing on is how many jobs is that providing? How many actually graduate out of the incubator into the community? And what we found being in the metro area is some of the businesses that graduated out didn't stay in Cottage Grove. They went to Woodbury or St. Paul or somewhere else. And so here we were providing the low rent and the resources to help grow businesses outside of Cottage Grove. And so it wasn't a good situation for us. But in greater Minnesota, I could see where they're more likely to graduate out of the incubator and then stay in the community and provide jobs in that community. And that's really what the goal is. One last question is, the rent, I'm assuming, is much lower than other commercially available space in that area. How are the other businesses owners or the commercial real estate business owners or building owners, how do they react to having that low cost competition for space? Is that something that do they look at as a positively because those are people that may grow into their space eventually, or how do they react to that?
We don't price our rents lower than the market around here because the market in our neighborhoods tends to be older buildings, right? And so those rents, like on Lake Street and University Avenue, Payne Avenue, Rice Street, et cetera, you know, for small retail space, usually they don't even do it per square foot. But if you figure that out, it's somewhere around, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 bucks a foot. And that's, so we're in that range. And so when I talk about long-term affordable, I'm talking about being at that level of, in the real estate world, I suppose they'd call it Class C. We make a nice space, but they're going to be paying the same rent after we've renovated the building or in our new buildings. I mean, I'm sitting right now in a brand new building we built at University in Dale, which is our second brand new building here just down the road from the Capitol. And we'll have five retailers on the first floor here eventually, and their rents are going to be in that probably $15 to $20 a foot range, and it's triple net, so they have a CAM on top of that and taxes. So I guess the question you've asked has never come up. I'm not sure if our neighboring businesses know what we charge, but what we want to avoid, you know, I want to emphasize the word long-term affordability, right? So we can keep these rents at a rate that a small business that's maybe doing $25,000, $30,000 a month of sales can afford. And in a new construction building, that's not possible unless you really bring the cost down like we have. So, I mean, in general, the surrounding businesses are thrilled to see these empty buildings or these empty lots or these old derelict buildings renovated or rebuilt. And so it helps their businesses a lot, too. And that's the basic reaction we get.
Mr. Chair, one final.
Representative Jones.
So you mentioned, Mr. Tamale, 3 years is kind of the goal for businesses to graduate out, but you don't necessarily push them out the door at that time. Is that the goal, though, is to for each of these businesses to grow and move out and make space for somebody else to come back into that space and start over?
That's a fairly classic goal for incubators. It's not really our goal. Oh. Our goal, because, you know, we're mostly dealing with retailers or food businesses. And so, you know, location, location, location. If you move a retailer or a food business, that's going to have a pretty drastic impact, not only on their customer base, but also on their cost structure, right? So our goal is to get them to start. These are mostly startups we have in there, and then to grow their sales, grow their profitability, learn how to run that business, and then maybe start a second or third location. And in a number of cases, they do outgrow the space. I mean, Los Ocampo Restaurant has gone on now to start, I think, 7 or 8 sit-down restaurants all over the greater metro area, coming out of Chicago and Lake, Global Market. A number of places have expanded like that, or to just grow their offsite sales or online sales. You know, we want business growth, but it's not necessarily that they have to move out of the building. And the other thing is, if we get rid of all our strongest tenants, we've kind of got a problem. You know, you want the strongest ones in there to sort of mentor and guide the newer ones, the startups.
Okay.
No, thank you for answering my questions. Thank you.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've heard from community members about NDC's programs, and I appreciate all that you are doing. But I've always been just curious about how you're engaging and supporting immigrant entrepreneurs who may face barriers such as language access. Can you share with me how you are including these entrepreneurs?
Mr.
Representative Zhang. So we've trained over 6,000 people over our history in our 12-week entrepreneur training class, of which 40% are recent immigrants. And so our training class is offered in 5 languages, including Somali, Oromo, Hmong, Spanish, and English. Our financing that we've done over the years is over $25 million, and at least 40% of that has gone to recent immigrant entrepreneurs. We were one of the developers and longtime owner and manager of the Mercado Central, and are currently working with the Mercado Central and the Hmong Village to get $300,000 from the Deed Cultural Mall program into each one of those two properties. We have bilingual staff. We have 4 Hmong staff. We have 3 Latino staff. We have, anyways, so we can operate in all those languages with our lending program, with our technical assistance program. We designed and launched the very first in the nation Islamically acceptable small business financing product in the year 2000. And we've shared that with Deed and with the City of Minneapolis, with African Development Center, et cetera. We built capacity in. We helped launch African Development Center, Latino Economic Development Center, and continue to work with these groups as much as they're interested to this day, African Economic Development Center. So we've built capacity in their community to run their own programs. So I could go on, but that's at least a taste, I guess.
I say, Jean. Thank you. With that, I don't see any member. Representative Jorgensen, do you have any question? I see your hand still raised. All right, Representative Greenman, to your closing remarks. I know supporting small businesses is what keeps our state moving, and especially access to capital coming off of the pandemic when many small businesses that have been hit hard and they've used all their savings. So it's something that we're more interested in looking into as we come to the closure of this session. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, and I will be brief. Last year, we heard from the Soul to Soul Smokehouse, and if anyone wants to join me over there at Midtown Global Market, I really appreciate Mr. Hoffman. And so I'm just gonna leave with your words, which is it's working. And clearly what we heard is there's demand in our corridors here in the Twin Cities and also in greater Minnesota. And so with that, I think I'd ask for your support in investing in these local businesses and in the things that help them help their communities thrive. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Greenman, for bringing this bill forward. Looking forward to finding ways to support small businesses. With that, Representative Greenman renews her motion, House File 3536, be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much to all the testifiers on this bill. The final bill we have on the calendar is House File 2306. Lead Hamilton, please welcome to the your committee and proceed to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move this House File 2306 to be laid over for possible inclusion. And Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment.
Will you want to move the amendment now?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would basically, it's a cleanup language to bring it into the current fiscal year. And so I'd ask for your support on this amendment.
Representative Hamilton moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the amendment is now adopted. With that, Lead Hamilton, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be very quick here so we can get to the three testifiers. This is an $800,000 appropriation. It's a program that serves manufacturing-related companies with 250 or fewer employees, excuse me. And there is a cap of $50,000 per year on this program. And I want to stress that this is a proven successful program. There's actual measurements to show since 2008. Again, this is a proven successful program. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers. And I believe the first one would be Lynn Shelton, the President of Marketing and Organizational Development, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Shelton, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chairman Noor and Vice Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Shelton. And as Representative Hamilton said, I serve as the Vice President of Marketing and Organizational Development at Enterprise Minnesota. And Enterprise Minnesota is a nonprofit consulting organization that works with Minnesota's small manufacturing companies to help them compete and grow profitably. We want to help them be the employer of choice in communities by providing excellent careers for their residents. And we're here today to ask the legislature to reinstate this impressive job creating and job retaining program called the Growth Acceleration Program, or as we refer to it, GAP. We seek $800,000 for the remainder of the 2022-23 biennium. Since this program was inception in 2008, on average, it's proven a return on the state's investment by at least $15 to every $1 invested. And some manufacturers in the past have testified that these funds conservatively have yielded a 30-to-1 return on investment. GAP helps small companies in Minnesota get the help they need to stay in business, keep their employees, and grow. It has helped hundreds of Minnesota small manufacturing companies access improvement services that they might not otherwise afford without this hand up. All companies that are awarded GAP resources must match every dollar with a dollar of their own. Our manufacturing clients repeatedly say that without GAP, they would be unable to invest in improving their companies and employees. This is true both in the Twin Cities and in Greater Minnesota, where business improvement service resources are either scarce or too high a price tag. The state has invested in GAP for 11 years. It's achieved widespread bipartisan support because it helps manufacturers create and retain high quality jobs and brings economic stability to local communities. Manufacturing, as you probably know, is a key economic driver of our state's economy, and particularly in Greater Minnesota, where manufacturing jobs are most often the lifeblood of local communities. In addition, this funding will help manufacturing companies leverage their own investments and enable them to use the diverse consulting services from Enterprise Minnesota and its consulting partners. We cover the entire state. This is a program that works. To qualify for GAP, manufacturers or manufacturing-related companies, they must be located in Minnesota, must operate as independent profit centers, and employ 250 or fewer full-time employees. They must work from a solid business plan and demonstrate a tangible economic need. The program is administered by Enterprise Minnesota, and DEED is the fiscal agent. In addition to GAP benefiting companies, its benefits ripple throughout Minnesota's economy. 1 in 7 jobs in Minnesota are in manufacturing, and every job created by manufacturers generates almost 2 additional jobs in Minnesota. That's over 33% of all state jobs. And to date, about 485 manufacturing companies in Minnesota have utilized GAP. Many of them are very small and without GAP would not be able to afford the resources that they need. The results are definitely impressive. An independent survey of manufacturers who have received GAP shows that they have collectively created and or retained 12,556 jobs in the state. They've boosted and retained company sales by $1.46 billion and saved $206 million in business costs. And these companies have invested $583 million in their plants, equipment, technology, and employee skills development. And as some of your earlier testifiers, have said, our request comes at a particularly urgent time for manufacturers. The sometimes surreal effects of the COVID economy have stretched many of these operators right up to their ability to cope. Wild unpredictabilities in the supply chain make it difficult to plan manufacturing schedules, and just one missing part can shut down production. And even when they can get parts, inflation and uncertainties about inflation is starting to hit them hard. They can't price their products for customers when they don't know the prices of the component pieces that they have to purchase. Manufacturers, like all employers, are challenged to find employees, any employees, not just skilled employees. The great work shortage really isn't going to go away. It's demographic, and there just aren't enough people to fill the jobs that need to be done. The COVID economy did not hit all manufacturers with equal measures of pain, as did the Great Recession of 2008 and 9. It's true that some of our manufacturers are still trying to survive against difficult fluctuations in demand. Others are struggling to keep up with rapidly growing demand within targeted sectors. Our point in all of this is that these diverse circumstances highlight how GAP will provide them with enhanced productivity and internal efficiencies that will help them cope and continue to provide their communities well-paying jobs with benefits. All of you have small manufacturers in your districts, and you have constituents who work for these manufacturing companies. Enterprise Minnesota is delighted to arrange a tour of your manufacturing constituents. It's a lot of fun to see the amazing products that are made right here in Minnesota. So on behalf of small and underserved manufacturers throughout the state, I hope you will help them grow and remain the excellent employers of good careers in this state through this $800,000 appropriation. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and we have two of Enterprise Minnesota's manufacturing clients here to testify as well.
Thank you, Ms. Shelton, for your testimony. The next person on the list is Mr. Paul Ebner. Please welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to give you my perspective on growth acceleration and why I strongly support reinstatement of funding for the program. My name is Paul Ebnett, and I serve as president and CEO of Straub Design, an industrial automation company based in New Hope, a community of 21,000 people located in the Northwest Twin Cities. Straub Design is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year and employs 36 people producing automated tape application equipment used in renewable energy, traffic safety, packaging, and building material production. My colleagues are highly skilled engineers, fabricators, technicians, and great employees. In addition to my role at Straub Design, I am a board member at Bondus Corporation, a hand tool manufacturer with over 100 employees based in Monticello. Bondus also has an additional facility in St. Paul. I also currently serve as chair of the Enterprise Minnesota board. My experience with Enterprise Minnesota as a customer of their consulting services has been more than 10 years in length, and the last two organizations that I have led both benefited from GAP funding. The first company, Lewis Industries in Painesville, utilized GAP resources to help implement a quality program that was critical to the company and helped to secure and grow more than 40 jobs in central Minnesota. At Straub Design, we have utilized GAP funding for several projects that have helped us to significantly increase our sales, improve our processes, and double our workforce. In both companies, GAP resources were critical for us to move forward and leverage our own investments, which is important for smaller manufacturing organizations. I can speak directly to the expertise of Enterprise Minnesota staff and the variety of support, guidance, and insight that their consultants provide. They have helped our team with quality, productivity, business strategy, and process improvement issues that are typically more challenging for small organizations to address. Enterprise Minnesota has a well-developed process for delivering their services and a prudent, efficient use of its financial resources. As a board member of Enterprise Minnesota and as a client of their services, I can confidently confirm that Minnesota manufacturing companies have been better able to deal with the debilitating effects of the COVID pandemic, staffing shortages, and supply chain challenges with the expertise and support of Enterprise Minnesota. On behalf of my colleagues and the stakeholders at Straub Design, Bondus Corporation, and Enterprise Minnesota, I appreciate your consideration of this request for reinstatement of GAP funding. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much, Mr. Edmund, for your testimony. The next person to testify on this bill is Mr. Joe Plunger. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm happy to be here today to support the GAP initiative. As stated, my name is Joe Plunger. I'm the owner and CEO of Midwest Metal Products. We're a foundry in Winona, Minnesota, where we have operated for 31 years so far. And I'm here to express my support because companies like mine throughout the state of Minnesota are the economic engines that drive the state's manufacturing sector. During the COVID economy, In spite of the uncertainty, virtually all manufacturers were considered essential employers and having essential employees. And we continued to operate during that time, supporting our clients, our communities, and those employees. My business is located in Winona, city of about 26,000 in southeast Minnesota. We're a foundry that produces both steel and iron cast custom parts for a wide variety of industries, including mining, which is near and dear to the heart of Minnesota, and also for our country's defense. We also offer additional services to our clients, which are largely provided by other Minnesota manufacturers. So we have quite a wide net that we spread in Minnesota utilizing manufacturers. We have 43 full-time employees who earn good wages, along with bonuses, incentives, and a full benefit package. The economic impact of my $8 million annual sales is significant to Winona by way of taxes, employee spending, as well as the money we spend with local suppliers. And we do a lot of business with local suppliers. We're also active in a number of the local charity events, most notably Food Shelf and annual 10 Days of Giving, both of which support those in need. I've been working with Enterprise Minnesota since 2014. Shortly after I purchased Midwest Metal Products. I was a new owner, and I could see that we needed assistance across a number of aspects of the business, things that I knew we needed to do, but we didn't have the skills in-house, and some question of the resources. And Enterprise turned out to be a great fit for this assistance. Since then, I've done a series of projects utilizing a number of their consultants, workforce development, sales, marketing, plant efficiency and organization, and we're currently working on a strategic planning initiative, which has both improved the effectiveness of my team as well as having assisted with succession planning. And that succession planning will ensure that MMP, Midwest Metal Products, remains a business in Minnesota. I also utilize Enterprise for their offering of the Peer Council product, and a Peer Council brings together executives from a variety of businesses that work on common concerns and problems with people in similar positions. And it's facilitated by one of the Enterprise consultants who do a fabulous job in that work. We meet one day each month, and it provides a think tank kind of situation that cannot be duplicated within our plants. It's been a great help to me in my 8 years since I've been involved across that variety of subjects. Many small manufacturers are in a similar situation as I was when I was getting started. They know they need some help. They often don't know if they can afford it, and so they're reluctant to contract the service. The gap funding provides a bridge that gets many of those businesses to commit to the help that they need to be successful. And ultimately, that helps our state be successful. And they get help in marketing, quality, strategy, cyber, workforce development, and other disciplines. I know that Enterprise and the GAP funding did that for me. It swayed me in my decisions to proceed. And as a result, we have done a lot of good work for MMP and for our employees and community. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you so much, Mr. Panja, for your testimony. As always, investment in small businesses, especially manufacturing, and creating the next generation jobs, as you have stated, is something that we need to be aspiring to do. Small businesses are the engine of our state. So thank you for all that you do. Any discussion, members? Lead Hamilton, closing remarks?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to thank my testifiers. I'd just like to reiterate one more time that this is a proven successful program since 2008. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion that House File 2306 as amended be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. Lead Hamilton renews his motion that House File 2306 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, members, we don't have anything else on the agenda. Just wanted to thank you for being here. No any other discussion. We are now adjourned. Thank you so much.